Desai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Salam, dear listeners, and welcome to Vahini Satsang. Today we have, along with Sai Prakash, the co-host of the show, by Bhagwan's grace, a research scholar from the university who stays in the hostel, Brother Aman Jhaveri. Aman Jhaveri now is pursuing his PhD in the Department of Management Studies, and he is someone who has taken keen interest in documenting the beautiful moments of learning of so many Sai students. So he is someone who has heard a lot about Bhagwan's leelas, someone who has spent a lot of time ruminating on his teachings. So before we move on to the fifth chapter of Prema Vahini today, I want to request Brother Aman to share his insights on the first four chapters, because he is someone who has read the first four chapters and he has some interesting ideas to share. So Brother Aman, first of all, welcome to Vahini Satsang.
Thank you so much. It's really a wonderful chance to come here, you know, once again and remember, recollect, bring to our memory these wonderful teachings that Bhagwan has given. No, I had this chance to go through a couple of episodes that you all have done with previous guest speakers. And, you know, one thought that has really stuck to my mind, and I thought that maybe I'll just start by sharing that.
Sure.
Is about the moment we, you know, hear the word prema, you know, the first thing that comes to our mind is, you know, we have to start loving the creation. We have to start loving people around us. We have to start loving animals, birds, right, trees, everything, right? But there is something that precedes that. And mm-hmm. that is what I thought I'll maybe just share with both of you and the viewers.
Sure.
Is even before we start expressing or, you know, making an attempt to love somebody outside us, I think the first step is loving oneself. And by loving oneself, what I actually mean is accepting oneself, accepting ourselves the way we are in the present moment. Because why this is important is, Bhagwan often says, and he quotes this this verse from the Dakshinamurti Stotram, Vishvam Darpana Drishyaman Nagri Tulyam Nijantaragatam. The world is only a reflection of what exists in our own being, in our own mind. And therefore, unless you love yourself, unless you have compassion towards yourself, unless you empathize with your own self, right, it is almost impossible to manifest that love, compassion, empathy towards the creation outside. So I feel for any sadhaka, any seeker, even before we look into the world outside, a glimpse into our own beingness, our own existence, and a sense of compassion and love for ourselves, I think is a starting point. For me, the prema vahini in the prema in the vahini, you know, yes, starts from loving oneself and accepting oneself.
Yes, just like they say, charity begins at home, in the sense that even before you can think that you can love anyone else and evaluate whether I'm loving the other person enough.
Correct.
You can think of doing that only when you have begun to love yourself. If you are thinking that you're loving the other person,
yes,
without loving yourself,
yes,
you're actually in a delusion.
Yes, yes. And see, that is the problem. You know, what happens is, just think about it, okay? See, we are so judgmental of the world outside. Continuously, all the time, unknowingly, we are judging people. We are critical about people. And, you know, in fact, in one of the previous episodes, Swami talked about how you should not be criticizing others, right?
Yes.
And the reason why we do that, I mean, one of the reasons why we do that is, no, because we criticize ourselves all the time. We may not verbalize it.
Yes.
We may not speak about it, right? But at a very deep level, no, in our minds, we are constantly scolding ourselves. We are constantly, you know, demeaning our own selves.
Yes.
And I think that gets manifested in the world outside
us. Absolutely.
See, we see the incompleteness in us.
Correct.
And that is why we see incompleteness in everything else.
Yes.
And that incompleteness is nothing but, you know, cribbing all the time or yes. criticizing others or judging others. The moment we start looking at ourselves in a different light, no, I feel then our perception of the world will change.
Yes.
Then maybe we can say that, okay, maybe we are on the path of prema.
Yes, wonderful. In fact, that reminds me of how Bhagwan used to always say that if you see something unpleasant outside, it is just the reflection of what is there inside you.
Correct, correct.
Because that is there in you, you are able to yes. recognize that.
Correct.
Otherwise, you won't even recognize that.
Correct, correct. And Swami often gives the example of Duryodhana and Yudhishthira, right?
Yes, exactly.
And also, you know, this, since you're telling that, you know, this teaching of Swami, tell me your company and I will tell you who you are,
yes.
is also a reflection of that. See, if you think about it, no? Tell me your company and I'll tell you who you are. What does that mean? In one way, it means that because your company is bad, you are bad. It can be the other way also. Because that badness exists in you, no?
Yes.
You seek that company outside.
Yes.
So, the company with which you are, no, that is only a manifestation of the structure of your mind.
Yes.
And so, if you know your company, you know who you are.
Yes.
What your company manifests exists in you in some form or the other.
Absolutely. Wonderful. In fact, reminded of, as you just mentioned about good company, other day this thought came, not exactly on what you are saying, but I'll just share this thought because this is something also I felt which we can practice every day in life. You know, when we say good company, we are trying all the time to look for good people around us. You know, I feel that is very difficult, you know, because given the negativity that which is there in us so much, it might be really difficult. You say, I can't find anyone good here. Everybody has something or the other which, you know, I don't resonate with. But I think if we say that good company is seeking the company of the goodness.
True, true.
Around
yes,
you.
Yes,
no,
yes.
Then you said, yeah, there's yes. no problem, you know. In every person there is something good. I can resonate with the good, this good thing in Aman,
yes, yes,
this
correct,
good thing
correct,
in Sai Prakash.
Correct.
So I think then we'll always be in good company.
Yes.
And I think that is what...
A wonderful insight, yes.
That is what Bhagwan also was telling us. Because right from the time, you know, he started giving discourses, he said embodiments of divine love, embodiments of divine
yes,
Atma.
Yes.
So he's telling that you are basically God. With
correct.
That premise, if you see the whole spiritual philosophy
yes.
of Bhagwan,
yes.
it started with that premise yes. that you are God.
In fact, you know, we were just talking before the show. Swami has given maybe 3,000 discourses or maybe even more, right? We as devotees of Bhagwan want to follow everything that he has said, right? But we very conveniently ignore the very first line. Embodiments of love.
Embodiments of Atma.
See, why don't we have the guts to tell, I am God.
I am God.
See,
yeah.
we may not practice it. That's fine. Because
yes.
we are human beings, right?
Yes.
But we should have the guts, no? That I am love. I am the embodiment of love. I am the embodiment of Atma. We say, no. Chho chhod do. Other things we will start.
Hmm.
I think let's not do that. I mean,
hmm.
you see, we may not be able to associate ourselves with as God. You know, that's quite natural.
Yes.
But let us not go to the other extreme.
Yes.
Let us not say that, oh, we are something lacking, we are sinners, you know, this,
exactly.
that.
Exactly. You know, when you just mentioned we are human beings, that is again another thing which many times I think where, you know, we use that expression
correct.
To cover up all our yes. Lapses in trying to strive.
Yes.
You know, we say, okay, of course, yeah, I mean... Yeah, I got angry.
Yes.
It's human.
Yes.
I'm human, you know. Yeah, I got attracted.
Yes.
I'm human, yeah.
Yes.
I mean, but what we are trying to say, no, that is not
yes.
being human.
In fact, you know, this reminds me of an experience that one of our alumni shared with me. One day, Swami was upset with one student. And they were doing some packing in Purnachandra Hall. So there was another boy who was in form that time, you know.
Okay.
Quote-unquote form. And there was one boy who was out of form.
Okay.
So this form boy thought that he will make a recommendation of this out of form student to Bhagwan. So Swami came and the form boy told Swami, Swami Papam, you are not talking to this boy. So Swami ignored him.
Mm-hmm.
Then he said, Swami, he's made mistakes. Swami, he's human, Swami.
Oh.
Immediately Swami, you know, became very upset and Swami said, to be human is to make no mistake. This is what Bhagwan told. Yes. So, you know, you are right. You know, when you say that, you know, we cover up ourselves, yes, that we are only humans.
Yes.
Actually, we have to use it in the positive light.
Yeah, yeah. We can say, okay, we are actually, what we are trying to say is, you know, we are animals. Because,
correct,
I mean, though it doesn't sound good.
Yes.
Because ultimately Swami says all these traits, Swami compares them to one animal or the other.
Correct.
Be
correct.
It anger, be it,
yes,
desire, you know.
That's true.
That's, yeah, true. So ultimately we are saying that, yeah, I'm not human. I'm, yeah, not human. So,
yes,
though,
yes,
I am in the garb, you know,
yes,
the body of,
yes,
a human being,
true,
I'm,
true,
not human.
And this, so, you know, just to kind of bring a conclusion to this particular segment,
yes,
I feel the whole idea of prema in the context of Prema Vahini comes from a dimension which is deeper than the mind.
Yes.
Right? And see, that dimension has to be accessed by all of us within us. We cannot kind of, you know, search for it outside. It has to be discovered within ourselves. Only when we approach this theme from that dimension, no? We may be able to explore what Swami is probably trying to say. Otherwise, to explore it at the level of the mind,
yes,
saying that, you know, love is an emotion or a thought or a belief, you know, then it becomes challenging, because all thoughts, emotions, beliefs are temporary. When we are, yes, in deep sleep, we don't have any thought, we don't have any emotion, we don't even know who we are, right? So if we need to approach the topic of prema, I think it has to be done from a deeper dimension of our personality, of our beingness.
Yes. I think it is love, as very beautifully also you said, it is not a feeling, ultimately it's being.
Correct, correct.
And correct. That is something that really is the, perhaps the journey and the destination.
See, if you look at sadhana, no, you know, we all the time we talk about spiritual sadhana, and in this also Swami has mentioned that our whole life has to be a pursuit of sadhana. See, you know, what is the difference between the sadhana that Swami talks about and all other sadhana that we hear, even as part of Sanatana Dharma, as part of any other religion, right? See, all sadhana, let's take example of mantra japa, which is a very common sadhana that all of us try to engage in some point in our lives. You know, all sadhana starts with an assumption. That assumption is that I am incomplete, and if I do this mantra japa, I will get something which will complete me. Okay? Vedanta sadhana starts with a totally opposite assumption. Okay, Vedanta sadhana tells you, you are not incomplete. You are totally complete, right? Start your sadhana from that dimension of your beingness, which is complete, right? And that is where I think the main difference comes. And that's again, yes, going back to the point of, you know, loving yourself.
Yes.
By loving yourself, you are not loving the mind.
Yes.
You are not loving the personality you are.
Yes.
But you are trying to explore a dimension deeper than your mind.
Yes.
Which is something much, much more subtle,
yes,
but something more truer, if you can use the word.
Absolutely.
And you are making an attempt to establish a connect with that.
You are, to put it maybe one way, you are just being the Atma.
Correct, correct. Yes, you are just being.
Yes.
You know, it's very tough.
I know.
Doing is very easy. Sadhana is not doing. Sadhana is being.
Being.
Can you just imagine to sit in a place, just close your eyes and sit? I mean, if anybody has tried it, it is almost impossible, because the mind is like a generator that's running from a source of energy which we are not aware of. And the moment, and you know, the thought that you are meditating is the biggest hindrance in meditation.
Yes.
Because then what happens is, continuously one after the other, thoughts keep on coming, keep on coming, keep on coming, and then we get flown into the stream of thoughts.
Yes.
And then, you know, we forget what we are doing, then we come back, we forget, right, we come back, we forget.
In fact, if anyone has tried to do, just trying to be in a zone where there are no thoughts.
Correct. Yes.
I think that is an experience by itself. And,
yes,
you know, at some point in time, I used to try to do this, especially, you know, when Bhagwan, when we are waiting in darshan, mm-hmm, for Bhagwan,
mm-hmm,
you know, there is silence everywhere.
Yes.
And the vibes around you are also so conducive.
True.
To do sadhana. And what I have experienced, you know, very, very little, is that it's really extremely difficult,
mm,
to just not have any thoughts.
Yes.
But whenever you reach there,
mm,
your whole self becomes so light.
Yes.
Actually, you know, the whole concept of you being caged in the body just evaporates so easily.
Yes.
You actually so effortlessly become part of a larger whole.
Yes, yes, that's true.
In fact, it's very difficult to sustain that.
Here Swami uses a word called harmony. You know,
yes.
There's a book called The Flow, which is written by a person called Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi. He talks exactly about this, but from a very worldly perspective, in the sense that he talks about it from the application in the corporate world and all that. And he gives this example of a football player. And he says, when the football is at the feet of a football player, right, what is he thinking about? He's actually not thinking about anything. In that moment of intense concentration, no?
Yes.
Even the thought that I have to hit the goal is not there.
Yes.
He is so much intensely focused in the present moment, no? That thought also does not occur. And his research has shown that people who experience such bouts of intense concentration experience a sense of happiness, which does not actually come from scoring the goal. Okay, it actually comes from that experience of what he calls as the flow.
Yes.
In which you are in the zone.
Okay, I think let's listen to the chapter 5. Because here Bhagwan begins a new journey for us, wherein he brings in the three paths to Godhead. So let's listen to that and then take the discussion further.
భక్తి జ్ఞానము ఒక్కటే. భక్తి జ్ఞానము వేరువేరని తలపరాదు. మానవునికి బోధపడుటకు వేరువేరు మాటలతో చెప్పుకొందురు. భక్తియే జ్ఞానముగా మారును. సగుణ నిర్గుణ సంబంధమే భక్తి జ్ఞాన సంబంధం.
ప్రేమవాహిని చాప్టర్ 5. వన్ షుడ్ నాట్ కన్సిడర్ డివోషన్ అండ్ విజ్డమ్ యాజ్ డిఫరెంట్. They are differentiated only for the ease of man's understanding. Devotion transforms into wisdom. The relationship between the two is the same as the relationship between devotion to a form and devotion to the formless.
So you have Bhagwan telling us the Bhakti Marga and Jnana Marga can be compared to Sakara and Nirakara Bhakti. Your thoughts, Sai Prakash?
Yeah, Sai Ram. Yeah, this is just the introduction to this chapter. And Swami is just saying that there is no difference between Jnana and Bhakti, just as there is no difference between Saguna and Nirguna aspects of worship. I don't know, I think we'll have to go further to see what Swami is saying about it.
Yes.
Because it's too short a paragraph to say anything.
So one thought that comes to my mind, you know, when Bhagwan says devotion transforms into wisdom, the imagery that comes to my mind is Bhagwan narrating about Gopikas.
Hmm.
Because you have that instance from the Bhagavatam where Swami very beautifully explains how the Gopikas are pining for Krishna and they are praying that Krishna, please take the essence of the Vedas, Patapadu Ma Krishna, Swami sings, Veda Saramanta Tisi. So Swami says, the Gopikas are praying, Krishna, you please take the essence of the Vedas, convert that essence into Sabda Brahma, into sound, and put that sound into your flute, and then you play the flute.
Beautiful.
So that is, I feel, you know, that's a very beautiful way of they trying to get the essence.
Correct.
Of all the wisdom.
It's true. It's true.
And then Swami says that when Krishna sends Uddhava, we know that story, and Swami says that Uddhava goes to Vrindavan and he says, I have a message from Krishna, and the Gopikas there say that, first thing they ask is, of course, how is Krishna? Where is he? And then he says that, you know, I have got this letter from Krishna. Can any of you please read this letter? And then each person looks at the other because, first of all, many of them are actually not educated enough, and the other most important thing is as one person reveals, see, all the time we've been thinking so much about Krishna that I'm afraid if I take the letter, tears will just, if I see one word from Krishna also, tears will just flow. I will not be able to resist myself, and you know, those tears would just get smudged. So please, I cannot, you know, do it. And then another Gopika says, you know, this fire of separation is so much that, you know, the whole body is actually burning with that desire for Krishna. I don't know if I hold this, what will happen to that paper. I'm afraid we will lose the contents. So this is how every Gopika expresses, and Uddhava is like stunned. What is this devotion?
Correct.
And then finally he says, okay, I will only read it out. And so there Krishna very beautifully has written, I am always in you, around you, with you. I am your Hriday Nivasi. I have sent Uddhava. He is going to give you yoga and jnana.
Yes.
You know, so that you can experience divinity. And so Uddhava says, this is what Krishna has told. And so I am here to share with you wisdom and yoga. And immediately the Gopika says, we are not interested in any yoga, because all we want is samyoga. It is only one with Krishna. And already we are having so much vyoga of Krishna, so we don't want another yoga. What will you do with your yoga? And then you said you want to tell us about jnana. But jnana means we need to have mind. But you know, we have only one mind, and that is given to Krishna. So there is no other mind. How will we absorb what you are trying to tell us?
True.
And then you have Uddhava, who is absolutely flabbergasted. He comes back to Krishna and he says, Krishna, I went to teach them wisdom, but I learned what is devotion.
Correct. Correct.
And there, the very beautiful thing about bhakti that comes, Bhagavan explains, is bhakti is where there is no vibhakti.
Correct.
Where there is no separateness.
Yes.
And here, you know, when the Gopikas say that we don't have another mind, that is what is bhakti. I think,
yes.
No, this example like strikes you whenever Swami says that how bhakti can become jnana.
True.
Thanks to, if your bhakti is at that level, then there is no difference only between bhakti and jnana.
One more, just one more dimension of this devotion and, you know, how devotion and jnana somewhere around the, you know, kind of just merge. You know, recently I was reading some research articles on neuroimaging.
Okay.
And how the human brain works and how the brain determines human behavior. Now this is very different from the example that you gave, because that was, you know, about bhakti from the Gopikas.
Yes.
This is something which is scientific, but
sure,
maybe relevant.
Yes.
Scientific research is now increasingly finding that almost everything that we do is driven by the biochemistry of the brain and the body. Which is nothing but the three gunas that our scriptures talk about, sattva, rajas and tamas. But now we are having scientific evidence to demonstrate how imbalances in the brain or an anomaly in the brain structure can lead us to certain behavior which we deem as immoral or not right in the context of the world in which we live today. So now the question is, somebody may ask that if everybody is born with the biochemistry and that is going to determine our life, right, then where do we place the whole idea of spirituality or, you know, a human being's own willingness or agency to override this software?
Yes.
Or the hardware with which we have actually,
yes,
been born in this world.
So we are saying if someone has committed a crime, it,
yes,
is because he is hardwired.
In fact, the research has been done specifically on prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
And they have shown that a tumor in the brain can cause a person to indulge in acts like murders.
Mm-hmm.
And when the tumor is removed and the brain is restored to its natural structure,
mm-hmm,
the tendency of the individual to kill totally vanishes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, you know, this is the research that the scientific world is doing. And of course, the corollary to this is everybody is hardwired. So, is there even a chance for overcoming this thing?
Yes.
See, this is what even Swami talks about, that ultimately one dimension of spirituality is to overcome the impulses.
Yes.
Impulses are nothing but this biochemistry, right?
Yes.
How are you going to overcome the impulses, right? One way in which it happens is through intense love. Because once you are committed to a higher ideal in life, no?
Correct.
Then you always have this option of deciding between what is Shreyas and what is Prayas.
Yes.
What is it that Swami expects and what is it that my biochemistry is telling me to do?
Yes.
That power to override the biochemistry of the mind, the brain, resides in intense devotion. The more devotion we have, no, the more will be our ability to override these tendencies.
The more power you have.
Yes. And the more you override these, the lesser the power of those tendencies become.
Yes.
And therefore, see, for example, no, today you may say that jnana is equanimity. Let's say, samatvam yoga uchyate. That is, let's say, knowledge. Right? But the biochemistry does not allow us to be equanimous. Right? It will continuously secrete some hormones, endorphins, here and there, right? Which make you experience different moods.
Mm.
But if you have the devotion to Swami, and you say that, this is what Swami expects.
Yes.
This is what Swami has told, right? This is what Swami has taught us. So that devotion overpowers the hormonal structure of our body, the biochemistry, and that's how we come to experience the teachings of Bhagavan.
Yes, and that is where science ends and spirituality begins.
Yes, yes.
If you're trying to solve the problems of, you can solve the problems of science through spirituality, but you cannot solve the problems of spirituality through science.
You know, if we have time, can I share one beautiful anecdote that, that the difference between science and spirituality, you know?
Yes.
So in 1960s, there was this physicist who won the Nobel Prize, and his discovery was that in a given period of time, let's say a second or so, matter explodes and recreates X number of times, right? This is basically what the Buddha said. The Buddha said everything is impermanent, right? Even your own body is getting created and destroyed every second millions of times. So there was this meditation practitioner who's also an author. So he said, wow, this fellow, this physicist, has discovered what the Buddha has discovered. Let me go and meet him. So he goes to this university in US to meet this great scientist. And the moment he meets him, you know, they exchange pleasantries. And then once they start to talk, the scientist tells him, see these people here, I have won the Nobel Prize. Still they are not giving me equipment. I am not getting funding. I am not getting researchers. Okay. So this person, this meditator, you know, he's thinking to himself, the Buddha discovered the same thing. Okay. He became Buddha after this. This fellow also discovered the same truth.
Through
science. He's become more miserable. What is the difference? And then he beautifully writes, he says the only difference is the Buddha discovered the truth within himself. And this scientist discovered it outside himself.
Outside.
That is the only difference. Otherwise, the equation is almost the same. The number of times he has, you know, talked about how matter disintegrates is almost equal to what the Buddha said.
And Buddha didn't have to spend even a single rupee.
Exactly.
He has spent billions of dollars.
Exactly, right? So this is what happens, I feel. No, this is the difference between science and spirituality.
Yes.
Ultimately, as Swami says, no, they are same sides in the sense, you know, they are both is like, you know, completing a circle. But the only difference is pravritti and nivritti marga.
But at the same time, I feel there is only to a certain level that science will take you.
That is true.
Because science perceives things through the help of the senses, to
correct.
The extent the senses can perceive.
Correct.
But spirituality is something which goes beyond.
That is true. That is true.
So there is only a certain, up to a certain level where both can meet.
Correct.
After that,
correct.
You have to submit to spirituality to find the missing answers.
I think only use of this discussion for is that, you know, for somebody who's a little bit skeptical, no, may find some solace that, okay, if science is moving in that direction, then maybe what these people are talking for, maybe thousands of years, may be true. Let me try and explore it.
Yes.
So maybe it is targeted towards that audience.
Yeah, wonderful. So let's move to the next paragraph.
కర్మ అనునది భక్తి అనునది జ్ఞానం అనునది వేరువేరు అనుటకు నేను ఒప్పుకోను. వాటిని వేరువేరు చేయడం నాకిష్టం లేదు. కర్మ భక్తి జ్ఞాన సముచ్చయ వాదమును కూడా నేను అంగీకరింపను. కర్మయే భక్తి, భక్తియే జ్ఞానం. మైసూరుపాకు ముక్క మాధుర్యము, దాని ఆకారము, దాని బరువు మూడునూ వేరువేరెట్లగును. మనం నోటిలో వేసుకున్న వెంటనే దాని ఆకారం తినివేసినాము, దాని బరువును జీర్ణించుకున్నాము, అందులోని మాధుర్యమును రుచి చూసినాము. ఈ మూడు పనులు కలిసి ఒకసారే జరిగినవి కదా. ఒక క్షణమున ఆకారము, ఒక క్షణమున బరువుయు, మరొక క్షణమున మాధుర్యము లేదు. ఆ విధంగానే జీవుడు ఆత్మ, పరమాత్మ వేరు వేరు కాదు, కానే రదు.
I do not subscribe to the view that devotion, action and wisdom are separate. I do not like it to be segregated. I will not even accept a collective argumentation about it. Action is devotion. Devotion is wisdom. A sweet like Mysore Pak has sweetness, size and weight. How can you isolate one from the other? Once we place it in our mouth, immediately we have consumed its shape, digested its weight, and tasted the sweetness therein. Do not all the three happen simultaneously? It does not happen that its shape, weight, and sweetness are experienced in separate moments. Similarly, the individual, the spirit, and the supreme spirit are not different. They cannot be so.
What is striking here to me is that the emphasis, the force with which Swami is telling that you cannot separate one from the other. You know, Swami is reiterating again and again. I don't like it to be segregated. I don't subscribe to that view. I will not even accept an argumentation about it. Isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, just think of the Mysore Pak. Next time you get the prasadam in the mandir and suddenly you start
karma
thinking,
bhakti gana melting in my mouth.
But this is very beautiful. Because if you look at the Gita, for example, Professor Venkatraman used to say, one fine day you are reading chapter 2, Sankhya Yoga, and you say, oh, Jnana is ultimate. And then some other day you are going and you say, no, actually Karma Nevaka, action is the most important. Yes. Then you go to 12th chapter, Mayeva Manadastha, May Buddhim Nivesha, Nivisishasi, Mayeva, Ata Urdhvam. Think only about me, do only for me. Yes. And say, what more, Bhakti is the ultimate. Then, so he said he used to get confused with that. And then, one day, Swami was giving an analogy in the discourse, I believe. He asked, in the traditional South Indian marriages, or in traditional, any of the Indian marriages at least, you have a variety of items which is served. And one would often wonder, why the hell are they making so much, so much food goes waste. You have salty items, spicy items, sweet, you have bitter, you have different, all the six tastes are all there. And Swami said, that's because it is not one customer who's coming. You are catering to a whole group of customers who are coming. And you have to feed them what they like. Somebody may like dal more. Somebody may like curry more. Somebody may like chapati more. They may like different tastes. So they will take more of that item. Yes. And if you say you don't have something in that taste, they will go back disappointed. Mm. So also the Bhagavad Gita is not catering to one target audience. It's targeting different target audience. So somebody who is actually in the path of action, or somebody who is in the path of devotion, they get their own answer.
Yes. In fact, in the marriages, I just reminded of nowadays, you feel that, sweet is what people generally like. And, a hot item probably will be not so much liked. But nowadays, I think that given the number of diabetes people in any gathering, you have actually more people running for the non-sweet items than sweet items.
That is very sweet.
So, yes, tastes also change over time. Yes. God has to keep creating new things.
And see the love of Swami, really. Who in the world can explain Atma Tattva through a Mysore Pak? I'm telling you, it's almost impossible. Yes. If we read the Upanishads, we will come to know how complex it is. In fact, those people try to make it simple. Papam, they made it more complicated for us. And, I think this is a living example of Bhagawan. If you want to love somebody, don't confuse him more. Yeah. Just try to give the simplest things, highest truths in the simplest ways.
In fact, I just reminded in another discourse, Swami is saying how Krishna communicated Atma Vidya to the Gopikas. Swami says that, there was this clear blue sky and suddenly there was this clouds, black clouds,
and there was this thunder and lightning, and then Krishna used that opportunity to convey Atmavidya to the Gopikas. And he says, see, that blue sky, that is what is divinity. And all those black clouds that cover the sky, that is tamoguna. That is ignorance.
Beautiful.
The thunder that came, that is rajoguna. And the lightning that came, that is sattvaguna. And says, don't get confused. These black clouds, they'll go off.
Yes.
You know, with wind, the same wind which brought the black clouds, it will take away the black clouds too.
Yes.
So what will be left is only that clear blue sky, that is divinity.
Yes. I think Swami goes to the level, you know, what our mind is preoccupied with, he takes that and teaches us. He knows that as students, no, we are more interested in the Mysore Pak that is going to come after the talk. So he says, okay, if you want that, okay, through that I'm going to teach you this.
Yeah, wonderful. But I think, you know, but whenever I think about it, there cannot be a better example of, you know, how everything is just...
especially that Krishna sweets Mysore Pak. I mean, it just melts in your tongue.
Oh, yeah.
On your tongue when you put that...
Absolutely.
Just imagining
pure
that
ghee.
Pure ghee. And he says the weight and the shape,
yes,
and the taste, all
yes,
three change together.
Yes.
And... there's another thing which Swami was saying, approaches, basically when you're talking of bhakti, jnana or karma, there's a different approaches to the same goal.
Yes.
And Swami is very vehemently saying that they are the same.
Hmm.
On another occasion, I think again it was Professor Venkatraman who asked Swami this question. He asked him, Swami, which is the superior path? Dvaitam, Vishishta Advaitam or Advaitam? That is dualism or qualified non-dualism or Advaitam, that is non-dualism. And Swami looked at him and smiled. And, you know, common sense and, you know, what we read Adi Shankara's different bhashyams, and he says the only antidote to ignorance is knowledge. And only through knowledge you can attain self-realization, because that is the ultimate, all that. Jnana, that is the ultimate step and all that. Swami's answer was totally out of the blue. He said, for the person following Dvaitam, that is the ultimate path. For the person following Vishishta Advaitam, that is the ultimate path. For the person following Advaitam, that is the ultimate path.
That's the whole funda.
You know, God. Once Bhimsen Joshi, the great Hindustani vocalist,
yes,
was asked, Panditji, which is the easiest raga to sing? Then you know what he told? That which I sing the best is the easiest to sing.
That's all.
Wow.
But I think the deeper point here is that we may be on any path. One problem that, you know, we often experience is that, you know, we become attached to the path on which we are. And therefore, this problem arises, you know.
Yes.
That a person who is on the path of Bhakti Marga will probably somewhere in the mind, subconsciously, that thought develops that only Bhakti is, you know.
Yes.
And if you go to a sannyasi, he will tell only Jnana. Or if you go to a social worker, he will tell, no, only the path of action is there. I think Swami is warning us, you know, against those tendencies. And I feel this also brings in an element of compassion in us, because as spiritual sadhakas, one of the greatest challenges that we face, you know, for example, suppose if I go every day for Suprabhatam, I feel that going for Suprabhatam is spirituality. And every person who doesn't go for Suprabhatam is a non-spiritual person. You know, this is a real challenge which we see around us all the time. You know, if you go to Mandir every day, then you will tell others, you know, you don't go to Mandir, you are not devoted to Bhagavan. Whereas somebody will say, Mandir, I am doing service in hostel. You know, you don't know that is devotion to Swami. See, this is a challenge I feel which Swami is warning us against, in the sense that, you know, Swami is just trying to tell us that you may follow the path which best suits you, but that doesn't mean that everybody else should follow the path that best suits you.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
I think that's an important thing that I kind of personally take away from this.
I'm just reminded of Pedareddy Garu.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Pedareddy Garu, I remember seeing him looking after Sai Geeta as a student. You know, Sai Geeta was opposite the senior boys' hostel. And to be very frank, I used to always think, what about this person here? He spent all his life just looking after an elephant. Because he was not even coming for darshan.
Yes.
you know, for anyone, whenever they did any service, especially when you had Bhagwan in his physical form, the greatest reward or the greatest reason why you did any service was, you know, you will get one chance with Swami. That was there so much in everyone's mind. And here is someone who was like serving day in and day out and not even getting a darshan of Swami. And I used to feel, I mean, sometimes of course this was in my school days, but I used to feel, what a miserable life here. I mean, he spent all his life just looking after an elephant. He doesn't get any chance. That people who have done even 100th of the service that he's doing have got like so many photographs with Swami, and he's got nothing. Absolutely. And after, you know, sometime back when we are doing the story of Sai Gita, I started interacting with him. And about 2 years ago, I started asking him about himself. You know, I asked him, don't you ever feel that, you know, I need to do something else because now Sai Gita also is not there. You know, now so many people who should not go outside, now they say, okay, let's for a break, let's go to Badrinath, let's go to Kedarnath, you know. Why don't you think you need to do something else? Don't you feel you have missed something in life? He says, missed? For the last 40 years, he has not moved beyond the senior boys hostel, the Sai Gita shed. On one side, on another side is a canteen. This was a triangle in which his whole life has been revolving. And he says, why I should go anywhere? I'll tell you something. Swami has given me the greatest blessing. And what is that? I don't know how, but I just don't have any desire.
Wow.
He said, no, no. I said, no, but don't you feel you have missed something? Like, so much you have missed, 40 years. Missed? He said, I don't know. What is that you are saying missed? Because I am really feeling so full. He's saying that I just don't have any desire. I don't know. The only thing he does now, when he has time, when he's not serving in the South Indian canteen, is for the first time in his life, now he's opening, you know, Swami's life story. So this is Satyam Shum Sundaram. If you go to his room, no, he will tell, you know what? When Swami was a child, no, he went to the tree. And there he picked apple from the tamarind tree. Or now he's reading all that with great joy. Like a child, he will share those stories. Okay. But he says, I feel like I'm the most happiest person on earth. So I feel that is something, someone who spent all his life in karma marga.
Yes.
But bhakti was so, you're so steeped in doing that karma because of bhakti for Bhagwan.
Yes.
And he's reached that stage of, in some ways, that stage of jnana, where he says, I don't have any desire.
You know, this story, it just reminds me of that famous anecdote that king comes on the banks of a river and he sees a person in loincloth. He's just lying there and looks, yes, gazing. And the king tells him, why are you wasting your time? Why don't you get up and do some work? And then he says, okay, if I work, what will happen? If you work, you will get a livelihood, you will get money. Then with the money, what you will do? Then with the money, you can buy so many luxuries. And with the luxuries, what I'll do? Then you can relax and enjoy your life. And then he tells the king, what do you think I'm doing now?
Yeah.
Yes. So I think in a way...
Yes. Yeah.
There's another thought which just came to me, like karma, bhakti, jnana. It's also a question of integrity.
Yes.
And it's a question of... you know, Swami says... Manas sekam, vachas sekam, karmanyekam. So, if a person is following jnana marga, for example, can he cease to act?
Yeah.
You cannot say, I am following the path of
exactly.
wisdom, so I will not act.
No, which means you are not truly following the jnana marga.
Correct. Yeah. So, you cannot say, I am not going to act. I mean, inaction is the biggest action.
Yes.
So, even if you sit without yeah. doing action, that is an action.
Yes.
How can you say, I will not act?
Yes.
And then intention itself is bhakti.
Yes.
Like, if that intention is sanctified towards the self, that is jnana, over.
Yes.
So, there's a question of, and you know, that's why, as you were mentioning Suprabhatam and other things, it's like unity of thought, word and deed, when Swami says, and he says another thing very beautifully, he says, there is no difference between spiritual and worldly life.
Correct, yeah.
So, it's like every action that you're doing, if you are in tune, that's what it is.
Correct.
fact, you're talking about Professor Venkatraman. I remember one occasion when Swami created a pen for Professor Venkatraman.
Mm.
And, you know, then later Swami asked him, what are you doing with it? And he said, Swami, I've kept it safely. But what are you doing with it? And Swami, only when some very important things, spiritual things, I'm using it to write. Swami said, Chi, what is this? Why, how can you distinguish this is a spiritual thing, this is a non-spiritual thing?
In fact, our Bhagya sir's famous experience, I think you also have shown it, and again, and in this year's alumni drama also, they had depicted it, where he goes to Swami and tells Swami, I want to go to the Himalayas, I want to do self-inquiry. And then Swami says, if you separate worldly life and spiritual life, in 1,000 births, I will not give you what you want.
Yes.
So he does the math. Okay, he says, okay, if I live 70 years, then 1,000 is 7,000. My God, gone. 70,000. So I am not going to get what I... Then he falls at Swami's feet. Mm. You know, and then, so, see, I feel, you know, where else will you get such teachings, you know, except for the way Bhagavan has given us. It's so beautiful.
Absolutely. But it's just that whatever you path you follow, you got to do that truly.
Correct.
Follow that sincerely. Only then the other things will happen.
I think very important word that CG brother has used is integrity.
Yes.
See, if you are committed yourself to the path of devotion, based on your intuition or your orientation, then it is very important to have a very high ideal in that, you know, and then be very honest with ourselves, and then keep on moving in that direction to the best of our ability.
Yes.
I think then eventually the knowledge that, okay, the jnana, bhakti, karma, all eventually combined will come at some point in our lives.
Yes.
But that integrity, I think, which he said was extremely critical.
Whichever path you may follow.
Yes.
It just reminds me of Ramakrishna Paramahansa, you know, his devotion was so intense that he never saw Mother Kali as a statue. It was a living mother, and towards the end, when he has that problem with his throat, when he has the cancer, and that's when mother, and he says, Mother, I cannot eat. And mother says, well, how does it matter? You're eating, there are so many other mouths. I think that is another, a very beautiful illustration, I feel, that, you know, how bhakti ultimately will lead to that stage of unity.
In fact, one experience that I have read about Ramakrishna Paramahansa is that, I think it was Swami Turyanand, when Ramakrishna Paramahansa was lying on the bed in his last days, suffering from throat cancer, and all his disciples are sitting around him, and he's looking very meek and tired. And so, I think Swami Turyanand was called Hari before he took sannyas, if I'm not wrong. So Hari comes in and he asks the master, Master, how are you? And the master tells him, Hari, I am in lot of pain and I am in suffering. And then everybody around also kind of supports that, yeah, look at the master, he's suffering so much. And then Hari says, but you look so happy. And immediately Ramakrishna bursts out into a laughter and tells, this rascal has caught me.
He's caught me.
Yes, he's caught me. Because everybody else believed him that he's suffering.
Mm.
But it was only Hari who knew that he knows that he's not the body. Mm. And actually he's always in bliss. How can he suffer? So this is again an example of jnana and bhakti, you know, come together.
Wow. Wonderful. Fantastic. So let's move on to the next paragraph.
ప్రతి కార్యము సేవామయము ప్రేమమయము జ్ఞానమయము కావలను. జీవితం యొక్క విభాగాలు అన్నింటిలోనూ కర్మ భక్తి జ్ఞానములు నిండి ఉండవలను. ఇట్టి వాణినే పురుషోత్తమ యోగము అందురు. ఈ భావాలు ఆచరణలోకి రావలను. నోటితో చెప్పిన ప్రయోజనం లేదు. శుద్ధమైన భక్తి జ్ఞానములతో హృదయము వికసింపచేసుకుని సాధన చేయవలను. నామామృత మాధుర్యములు జీవిత కళయు వేరు కాదు. నామము యొక్క ఆంతరిక ఘోషకును బాహ్య జీవిత కళకును సామరస్యమున్నది.
ఎవ్రీ యాక్టివిటీ మస్ట్ బి సఫ్యూజ్డ్ విత్ ద స్పిరిట్ ఆఫ్ సర్వీస్, లవ్ అండ్ విజ్డమ్. ఎవ్రీ ఆస్పెక్ట్ ఆఫ్ మ్యాన్స్ లైఫ్ షుడ్ బి సాచురేటెడ్ విత్ యాక్షన్, డివోషన్ అండ్ విజ్డమ్. దిస్ ఇస్ వెరీలీ కాల్డ్ the Purushottama Yoga. These feelings have to be put into practice. Merely speaking about them is of no use. After one's heart blossoms with pure love and wisdom, one should engage in spiritual practices. The nectar of the divine name and the art of living are not different. there is a concordance between the name of the Lord resonating inside and the art of living outside.
I think there are so many powerful statements here, isn't it? I mean, you have Bhagavan saying that after he mentions about how every activity should be suffused with spirit of love, wisdom and service, he makes that statement that after one's heart blossoms with pure love and wisdom, one should engage in spiritual practices. And you know, it comes back to what we were discussing before we started this session. I mean, in the beginning of this, before we started chapter 5, where there is no point in trying to do something to reach somewhere. And I think that's what Bhagavan is here hinting at. After one's heart blossoms with pure love and wisdom, one should engage in spiritual practices. So what are your insights on this, Aman?
Now, I think this is extremely powerful because, again, you know, our understanding starts with this. Let me do fasting so that I can develop love for Swami. Let me do Japa Yoga so that my heart blossoms, so that I get wisdom. Let me focus on Tattvamasi. Swami is making the whole equation totally turn around, you know. And he's saying that spiritual practices have to be done after the heart blossoms. And not the other way. Spiritual practices are not meant for the heart to blossom. Yes. But the heart has to blossom first and then spiritual practices have to be undertaken. See, one thing that that resonates with me in this statement, of course, as we discussed that this has to be approached from a deeper dimension of exploring oneself first, and then from that emerges everything that we do. Two perspectives to this I can probably share. The first thing is that the purpose of sadhana is to dissolve the ego. At some level, the purpose of sadhana is to dissolve this body consciousness. But unless most of the times or many times what happens is spiritual sadhana strengthens that ego. And you know, that is why we have to go back to Dharma Vahini, where Swami says that any act that is done with body consciousness is adharma. This may be an extreme statement, it may be a very powerful statement for us to digest. But even at the surface level, what it means that even if you are doing sadhana as a personality, I am a personality, Aman Jhaveri, or I am C.G. Sai Prakash, and this personality is doing this sadhana to achieve XYZ goals, then all you are doing is you are only strengthening your ego, your body consciousness.
Identification with the body.
So, I think the precursor to that is, and I think that's what Swami indicates, that, you know, once you look, turn inwards, then you explore a dimension deeper than your mind. And then the actions that follow naturally will be aligned to the spiritual objective of our life. That is one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it is, once your heart blossoms, then there is nothing like spiritual activity. Then everything becomes a spiritual activity.
Yes.
The reason being that I interpret this blossoming of the heart as blossoming of one's awareness, or, you know, being aware of awareness. See, we are aware all the time, but we are not aware of our awareness. We are aware of the thoughts that happen to us. The moment we start becoming of the aware of the awareness that we are, then there is a certain element of consciousness that gets translated into all the actions that we do.
Yes.
In Buddhism, there is a famous meditation called dishwashing meditation, right? Which is you wash dishes and you meditate. It is not the dishes that have some power, you know, which is going to give you some great power within you, but the level of awareness with which you do things is actually what differentiates maybe a spiritual activity from a non-spiritual. Spiritual activity may be something which you are doing consciously. For example, mantra japa. What is mantra japa? You are consciously aware of the sound that emerges from your mind. Instead of being aware of the sound, you are aware of the hands that are washing the dish or the teacup that you are, the tea that you are drinking, right? So I feel another way to look at it is like this. Once the heart blossoms, then every activity can be translated into a spiritual activity. Even if you are traveling in a bus, traveling in a train, waiting in the line, that moment itself can become a spiritual activity by just becoming aware of yourself. Because ultimately, that is what is Swami, that dimension of Swami within us is yes. That our own existence.
Yes. In fact, to put both the perspectives together, ultimately what Swami is telling in Dharmavahini also is that you are supposed to be guided only by the Atma.
Yes.
That is what is the Atma Dharma.
Correct.
And so if you are doing anything that is dictated or that is a trait of the Atma, then you are okay.
Yes.
So here also, if you know that you are the Atma, then you are, you know, you are in that awareness.
Yes.
Then whatever you do,
yes,
will have the right way to go forward.
Correct.
You know,
correct,
you are in the right direction.
That's true. Only problem is that, you know, many times when we use the words like Atma or Brahman, difficult, or Self, they are very big words.
Very big words.
You know, and then the human mind, the society in which we live, no?
Yes.
It creates social constructs.
Yes.
So Atman is also a construct.
Yes.
For somebody who is a charvaka, for him Atman may be something else.
Yes.
For somebody else, it may be a word used by RSS. For somebody, it may be addressing your own self.
Exactly.
But that's why I feel that in the spirit of introspection, no, even if we use simple words like awareness of our own existence,
yes,
or awareness of our own aliveness.
Yes.
See, we are alive.
Yes.
But how many times do we experience our aliveness?
Yes.
See, how many times in a day do we actually just sit back and say, okay, let me experience my own aliveness, my heart beating,
yes,
or blood flowing in my sensations in my body, right?
Yes.
I have personally felt that even doing that, you know, not even going to the level of I am the self who is all, yes, pervasive, which is true,
yes,
and which is where we all have to reach, even not doing even that, but even looking, just closing our eyes, or even with eyes open, just experiencing our own beingness, aliveness, no?
Mm.
That itself brings an element of, you know, immense joy and peace. It may be short-lived,
yes,
but it still exists. So
yes,
even from that perspective, if we start moving, no,
yes,
we can make good progress.
And what also occurs to me is, you know, as you mentioned, Atma is a very heavy word for people to fathom, digest,
yes,
live it in real life. But I think that is the reason why ultimately Swami brought the discourse to love.
True.
Because I think that is something, okay, to whichever level you can understand,
yes,
that is something that everyone can relate to. Because ultimately, if you see, it is all about compassion. Because Swami may have brought it down to compassion.
Yes, yes.
And I think that is something that everyone can relate to.
True.
I think, and if slowly you start practicing compassion, as you do it more and more,
yes,
then you will increase your level,
yes,
of understanding,
yes,
of compassion.
That's true. That's true.
And I think that is one practical, yes, way, yes, of
in fact, one more thing which is very true is, the more we go within ourselves, the more compassion we'll be able to manifest outside.
Absolutely.
We don't have to kind of, you know, really look out for dogs on the street to feed them and believe in ourselves that, oh, now I'm following compassion,
which, yes,
which is also what we see many times.
Yeah.
But let me give you an example. So recently there was, again in the field of neurosciences, there was research done on Buddhist monks who have meditated for more than 10,000 hours in their entire life. And they compared the brain structures of these monks with people who have never meditated in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And what they found out was that a monk's ability to manifest compassion was far, far higher than a layman's ability to manifest compassion.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, your responses to fear, anxiety, pain are much, much more minimalized in a monk as compared to a non-meditator. This doesn't mean that only meditators will follow or achieve the goal, because that's what we are discussing. But the point is this, by meditation, what they have taken as mindfulness, which is something,
yes,
that word that is being popularly used nowadays.
Yes.
But I think mindfulness is just one way, you know, turning inwards and rooting yourself, rooting your mind, not in the world, in the objects of the world, which are constantly changing, but rooting your mind in a deeper truth.
Yes.
Will also make that change. So the more we root ourselves in a deeper truth, and which is the deepest truth, according to Swami, it is our own self.
Yes.
So the more we root our minds in those, no, the qualities of compassion, empathy, love,
yes,
will naturally manifest. I don't think we may have to bring in a lot of effort to,
yes,
to
yes,
achieve those, or, you know, to see those happening in our,
yes,
life.
And I think a simpler way is, you know, just going by what Swami said, you know, You are God. You are God.
Yes.
You are God. If you just keep telling yourself,
yes,
the other person also is God, the other person also is God, then automatically, you know, only godly traits will,
yes,
demonstrate from you, you know, will exude from you. In fact, there is there's a interesting group called Love at Work. Sometime back, I had the chance to meet one of them. They're a group which started in Australia, and now it's an international group. So their whole idea, to put it in a nutshell, is how to basically translate this love into real life situations. And so they have these exercises where each person tries to imagine Swami in the other person, in your professional space, in your social space, in your personal space, and they share their experiences. And the transformations that have happened,
yes,
in them, in the surroundings, in the situation.
Yes.
And they compile them also sometimes. And
wonderful.
It's really amazing stuff,
yes,
that comes out. In fact, they released their new bulletin just today, this morning. And I happened to see that. And just to share one example, you know, so now they are thinking, okay, now there is so much of technology around us. How do we harness the power of technology? You know, we got to live with technology, but how do we use this to divinize our day-to-day activities? So there is this software developer, you know, he says, you know, I do a lot of coding. And so as I am coding, you know, he thought of, I have to do Namasmarana in some way. So in the code, you know, he tried to encrypt Sai Ram. So what he does is, he makes it an alphanumeric script for Sai Ram. So where A stands for 1 and S stands for 19 and, you know, I stands for 18, for 9. So Sai Ram for him is 19, 1, 9, 18, 1, 13. So that
beautiful.
That is Sai Ram for him. So he says, I insert this code in the comment section of all my code, you know, in the scripts that I write. And for, you know, for my peers, it is some number which the coder has put for his reference, so they don't bother about it. So, and nobody deletes it, but I know that is my Namasmarana. So similarly, there's another person who says that, you know, whenever he finishes a little bit of code, he puts a heart symbol there. Okay, just to remind him, okay, I've offered it to God. You know, this is an offering to the God. So after she finishes everything, then before he sends it to the boss, then she removes all the heart symbols. But everywhere she's put a heart symbol, it's constantly to remind that, okay, this much is for God. This much is for God. This much is for God.
In fact, one of the organizations that I went for my PhD, you know, I was very surprised. In fact, you know, just so that the readers, the viewers also know, it's not only that today we are talking about love and all these things. I am experiencing it myself that in the corporate world also, a lot of people are talking about these values,
yes,
and how they can be translated. And to one of the organizations where I went, they were undergoing an exercise called empathy building,
mm-hmm,
where what they do is, the moment you enter the organization, you have to pick up a card. And on that card, there is a random person's name in the organization. You may or may not know that person. And you are supposed to go and talk to that person for 5 minutes,
mm-hmm,
and inquire about that person's well-being.
Wow.
And luckily, when I was there, they have this fortnightly meetings where everybody comes together to share their experiences. And I was able to witness some of the experiences that these people had. They didn't have any typical spiritual orientation or anything. But, you know, when they came on stage and then they said that, you know, we didn't know this person. We went and spoke to that person. And more than that person being feeling happy, we were the ones who experienced happiness.
Wow.
We were the ones who experienced well-being. And they are now institutionalizing this process.
Wow.
So, yes, it's true that it's possible to practice these things. And even,
yes,
corporate organizations are doing it nowadays.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, definitely, anything that you do, even though your goal is not spiritual, but if you do anything towards that direction, worldly success will automatically happen.
Correct.
It's just the shadow, as Swami says, as you climb the coconut tree and the shadow, you're automatically climbing,
yes,
the shadow also.
Yes. I think that is also the theme of the next paragraph.
Oh, is it? So, I think we'll have to keep that for the next session. Let's pray to Swami that, you know, he guides us to understand further these beautiful ideas that he has so painstakingly written almost 40-50 years ago, and he gives us the strength to not only understand but also practice whatever we have understood and experience the joy of living a life where Prema Vahini becomes the way of your life and living. Thank you so much, Aman, for joining us, and we hope
Thank you so much for having me here. It's a pleasure and it's a great opportunity that Swami has given, and my immense gratitude to Bhagwan and your entire team. Thank you so much.
We hope that you can join us also for future sessions. So, dear listeners, so that brings us to the end of Vahini Satsang and to the day-long Thursday Live. As always, please feel free to share your feedback. You can write to listener@radiosai.org. And if you are reading the Prema Vahini, please do share your thoughts. If you have any questions on this chapter 5, we could take that up in the next session. Please feel free to experiment with what we are discussing. We are doing that ourselves, but it would be very nice to listen from you about your experiments with Prema, your experiments with this stream of beautiful life that Bhagwan has given all of us. So with prayers to Bhagwan and with gratitude for this beautiful opportunity he has given to ruminate on his message and to make our lives his message, we dedicate this entire Thursday life at his lotus feet. Thank you so much for being with us. Sairam.